Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. We love making this show, and we hope you enjoy listening to it, too.
If you'd like to support us, head over to patreon.com/grapesandgrain. For $1 a month, you can be our drinking buddy, where you get a shout-out on air. For $3 a month, be our happy hour date, where you get a post-season happy hour invite.
And our top tier is called Pick Your Poison, where donors get to pick the topic that we discuss on an upcoming show.
Go to patreon.com/grapesandgrain and make your monthly contribution now.
Cheers, y'all.
Sorry you didn't get a last bite of peanuts.
I know, and now I haven't unzipped my sweater either. So many noises. Hello, and welcome to Grapes and Grain Podcast. My name is Teeny.
And I'm Laura, and this podcast is about our favorite thing in the world.
Alcoholic beverages.
Well, color me excited. This year, you are knocking off a bucket list item, and I could not be more pumped for you.
Yeah.
Teeny is heading out this fall to Germany, for Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm headed out there. I spent some actually, like, quality time with my German family.
So cool.
Who I have not seen in 11 years.
Yeah, digging those roots. And you're not just stopping there, too. You're going somewhere else, right?
I'm also going to hit the Czech Republic while I'm out that way. So, yeah, I'm going to be gone for 2 full weeks. I'm really freaking excited. To dig into a place. I've been to Germany before, never been to the Czech Republic before, but the last time I was in Germany, I really wasn't like into beer. So knowing how far I've come since the last time I was there, I cannot wait to like indulge in like the foundation of brewing for, you know, the original foundation of brewing.
Yeah, that's going to be a really good time to go through this lens now, as opposed to when we were in college.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm also going to actually hit Oktoberfest. So I'm going to Munich and I will be there for a couple days. So we thought that this might be an excellent opportunity to dig into like what Oktoberfest really is and how it came to be. So obviously I found some notable beers for this Sehr Deutsch episode. That means very German.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for the translation.
Yep. But I'm curious, like, is German, like, German wine, what's the deal?
Right.
Well, Laura, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked, because I happen to bring a German wine. What I have today is a Dr. Hiedmann's Bergweiler 2017 Blitz Riesling from Mosel, Germany.
Ooh.
So like you said, Germany is most historically known for its contribution to beer, but did you know Germany is also home to 13 wine regions as well?
Oh, I did not know that, actually.
Yeah, the wine I brought today is from the region of Mosel Valley, and that's on River Mosel. And while it's not the largest producing wine region in Germany, it is arguably the most internationally known region.
Mm.
And it's famous, actually, for its extremely steep sloping vineyards, which have inclines reaching up to 65 degree angles.
Is this at the south of the country? Like near the Alps?
Oh, I should have looked more at geography a little bit. It is a river, I believe. Ooh, that starts in...
Sorry, we don't have to dig into it. But also, like, my family is located, like, literally right on the Rhine River.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's... Okay, don't quote me on
it. The Rhine River is, like, north to south,
comes
though.
From France, like, down. And then I should have looked into that. But, sorry.
You really should have looked into that.
Yeah.
Sorry. I just know that through my research, I found that the south of Germany is very Alpy, and that's like where all of the big mountains and hikes are. So that's when you said those steepness, I was like, probably by that mountain.
Is that like
range.
Where Bavaria is? Because there are some tributaries from Bavaria that like feed into this river. So that makes sense that it would be.
It seems like a really inconvenient place to have a vineyard.
Apparently, but these extremely like sloping vineyards, apparently the drainage is really great, but also like the reflection from the river coming back up, like it heats the vines in such a way it's like a perfect little pocket to grow these grapes.
So probably the hand-picked ones.
Yes. So they are very challenging, dangerous, and pretty labor-intensive for the vineyard workers, actually. And they use specialized equipment and techniques to tend the vines there. And while Germany does grow many regional varietals, I was looking up some of them. Some of my favorite names are Spätburgunder, which is actually just Pinot Noir, and Liebfrau Milk, which like literally translates to lovely woman milk. Like,
nice.
Yeah, weird. Yeah. So weird. Germany is known to be one of the world's top Riesling producers as well. And that's what I have today.
Yeah. So I feel like whenever I hear about German wine, I hear about a Riesling, but I don't think I've had very many.
Well, probably not, because they fell out of vogue after the 80s, because the last half century, they have a pretty a reputation for being sickly sweet. They come in a jug or one of those iconic tall, thin blue bottles. Mm. But in the last decade or so, Riesling has been upping its game, and you can find some really beautifully crisp and balanced versions like what I have today. So this Hedemans and Bergweiler 2017 Blitz Riesling is off dry, which means it's not bone dry. It's just a little bit sweeter. It's typically grown in a cooler climate, so it means higher acidity, which balances nicely with the sweetness.
Okay.
On the nose, we got stone fruits like peach, apricot, some fresh sweet apple, and it tastes really floral, like honey. And also, it's pretty oily. Not only is there like a petroleum scent, there's also like an oily texture. So taste that. That's kind of like one of the trademarks of that grape. But yeah, it pairs great with spicy foods and takeout, like Thai food, because it's a little sweet.
Oh, yeah. It's very acidic.
Yeah. This one clocks in at 12%.
Okay.
And
so that's
probably. It's a pretty iconic, like a Mosel Riesling would be one of the German wines.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Teeny, what you drinking?
What you drinking?
So today, I mean, I had to go classic. So yeah. I actually have a couple beers here. The first one is an Oktoberfest Märzen from Eyinger Brewery, a Privat Brewery. Brewery is how you say brewery.
And yeah.
We're gonna have a lot of pretty questionable pronunciations. But Eyinger is really cool. So I'll start with the style. This style was first served at Oktoberfest, the celebration, in 1872. Mm. And we've talked about Märzen before. I actually, through my beer class, learned that Märzen is not the correct pronunciation.
Oh.
It's Märzen. It's got the two dots over the A. And this is a very malt-forward style. It's named for the month March, in which it was traditionally brewed back before refrigeration. We talked about that before. They would harvest the ingredients and use whatever was left, and then they set it to lager all summer long, and they would bust this open with the coming of fall and autumn. But a fun fact, you'll see Oktoberfest beers all over America, but they're only allowed in Germany to be called Oktoberfest if the beer is brewed in Munich city limits.
Oh.
So, as we'll talk about in a little bit, Oktoberfest is very much like a Bavarian thing, and there's a huge sense of pride attached to it. Mm. So, this beer is actually not from Munich. It is from, let's see, I think it's from Eyinger. I think it's named for the city it's in. But you'll see on the label, it's an October Space Fest - Märzen. And I think that is to get around that specific labeling.
Oh. The loophole.
The loophole.
That is loopy.
But I love this style. If you can smell it, it smells so doughy. It's very malt forward. It's
it is doughy.
Pillowy. Brings you in.
It smells like Dampfnudel.
And then tasting it, it's really robust and caramely up front. But then because it's a lager, it is nice and clean after the palate. And so, but I did bring another beer today because though Märzen is named like for the festival, it's no longer like the most popular style of beer served there. So there are several varieties served at Oktoberfest, but in 1990, the predominant style was this Fest beer. Mm. So Fest beer, one of the breweries in Germany, Paulaner, iconic, they decided that the Märzen was too filling and too heavy for a giant beer drinking festival, and they intentionally created the Fest beer, which is, and I quote, designed to be, quote, more poundable.
Oh.
So that's what you see. And when I was at the store, I was told that this Sierra Nevada Oktoberfest was more like a Fest beer, but it's the same color as the traditional Oktoberfest. And Fest beer is actually supposed to be like a lighter straw color.
So Sierra Nevada has a brewery in Munich, or do they?
No.
Like, how come they can use that on their label?
Because it's only in Germany.
Oh, only in Germany.
Yeah.
Oh, because America does whatever they want on their labels.
Right.
I forgot.
Yeah.
They do that in wine, too.
Exactly. So I'm not going to say that this is a Fest beer, but I'm going to be drinking a lot of Fest beer while I am in Munich specifically. I know that for sure.
Ooh, I'm so excited for you. Okay, so before we get too far into explaining your trip, I'm sorry, I feel like a total booze noob, but what is Oktoberfest actually? I know it's a festival, copious amounts of beer drinking, And that's about it. Oh, and it's not even in October, right?
Right. So this is a great question because it is a legendary event, but it can be a little mysterious or misunderstood if you've never been. So Oktoberfest itself is a several week celebration, and it celebrates literally everything about Bavarian culture. So this year it's running September 21st through October 6th. And I'll tell you a little bit about the history. So the very first Oktoberfest was on October 12th, 1810. And it was this big festival thrown by a royal family to celebrate the wedding of Prince Ludwig I of Bavaria and his bride, Princess Therese of Sachsen. Hildburghausen.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, good job.
Yes. Yeah.
Textbook.
So basically what they did is to celebrate this wedding, they had a big two-day party and they invited the whole town. Yeah. And it became this annual thing eventually to include things like carnival rides and horse races and live music. Now, according to the Oxford Companion of Beer, which is this giant, like, beer dictionary that I have, the festival has happened every year since 1810, except for during times of war and during times of cholera. So even though the Oktoberfest technically celebrated its 200th anniversary in 2010, the official Oktoberfest website says that this is the 186th year.
Mm. Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
That is really interesting. Mm. I had no idea it was, like, started as a celebration for a wedding.
Yeah, it's fun.
And then, a cool party. Good for them. That would be so neat, a neat legacy for your, like, reception to ongoing every year for centuries.
Right. Oh, and just listen to how far the legacy goes.
Oh,
so
please.
Obviously the event has evolved over time. Today it's a family fair. It looks actually a lot like the State Fair of Texas from the pictures that I've seen. It includes, you know, carnival rides, some extreme ones that I've seen for adults. My friend Carly sent me this video. She's actually joining me. She sent me a video recently of this game at Oktoberfest where it's literally this woman. It's a bunch of people.
Oh, the spinning wheel.
The spinning wheel. Have you seen this?
Yes,
so
I have.
We might try to find the spinning wheel, but it's everything
totally.
From like that to like, I swear I saw a roller coaster in a picture that I saw.
Wow.
There's also live music. And yes, copious amounts of beer drinking, copious amounts of German food eating. Mm. Every year it welcomes about 6 million people. And in 2017, it was estimated that they served 7.7 million liters of beer.
Holy cow. So what does that break down to, like, people a day? Do we know that math?
Well, it's almost, no.
No. Yeah, no. It's 3 weeks long? Two, three weeks?
Yeah, it's about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay, wow.
Yeah. So Oktoberfest is actually called Weizen.
Weizen.
To locals, which means the meadow. And the meadow refers to this 100-acre field where the party is actually held.
Nice.
And it's called, the meadow itself is called the Theresienwiese after Princess Therese, who was originally married during the first Oktoberfest.
Very neat.
It's actually a couple of stops on the metro from downtown Munich, which surprised me when I found out. So it's like, I thought it was more of a South by Southwest vibe where it's literally all over the city
everywhere,
and you can't escape it. But this seems more like a an ACL vibe. Like it's a destination that you go and you can, people in the city
space.
Are still living normal lives.
Interesting.
Yeah. Basically what they do is every September, late September, they build this huge semi-permanent village with bars and vendors. Only the 6 large breweries located in Munich are allowed to serve beer there. And they each have what's called a tent, but it's more like a wood lodge. And it seats thousands of people, like 6,000 people or more.
I bet it gets rowdy in there.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, it gets so rowdy. And from what I'm told, I should say that my main source of information is our sorority sister, Gloria.
Oh, yeah, she lives there. She married a German man.
She married a Bavarian man, and she has been to Oktoberfest many, many times. So she said the event kicks off with like a big parade. It's similar to like the Thanksgiving Day parade. It's broadcast on TV and all the breweries have floats that strut down onto the meadow.
Float.
And then at noon, the mayor of Munich taps the first keg to officially declare the beginning of Oktoberfest.
Wow. That sounds so cool. That would be a neat opening event, I bet.
I know. And they do those, you know, whenever you hear about local Oktoberfest celebrations, like tapping of the keg, that's the whole thing.
Neat. Okay, cool. Well, so what would a typical day at Oktoberfest look like? Because you wouldn't go the whole 2 weeks, right? Like, what do you do when you go?
I feel like if you went the whole 2 weeks, like, you could do that. That sounds a little crazy to me, but without having been there.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah. Okay, so like I said, Gloria is the one who gave me the lowdown, and she's been several times since they started dating. Here's what she said that I should do when I get there, because the first leg of my trip, I'm flying in to see my family, and then I'm taking a train from Karlsruhe, where they live, into Munich, and that'll be on a Thursday morning. So what she suggested I do, and I can't check into the Airbnb until 4 p.m., and she's like, nope, you can't get to this festival past 4:30 in the afternoon. I'm like,
oh.
Okay, so here's my plan. She told me to get there at 1 or 2 p.m. and look at all the tents. So these quote-unquote tents that hold thousands of people, she said that they're, like, beautiful works of art. Like, they're semi-permanent structures. They have flushing toilets, total plumbing. Like,
wow.
And that they're decorated and, like, thoughtfully put up. They're not like these wedding tents.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Like, which is what I thought. Exactly. Yeah. So she said, if you want to visit those, like, get there early, take a little walk around, survey the land. But then by 4:30, it is game time. So every day at Oktoberfest, there are two seatings for lunch from noon to 4.
Okay.
And for dinner from 6 to 10 p.m. And people who reserve tables, they sit in these family style benches, and they're kind of like on the outer edges of the tent. And then there's what's called the pit, and it's the seating area in the center near a stage, and it's first come, first serve. So this is where you see, you know, the women carrying 10 liters yes. of beer on their arm. They bring them down there. You pay them in cash. You can't have a card. They don't take card.
Okay.
And so basically they bring them down and hand them out, and you pay her when you go, and you're supposed to eat, like, a ton of German food. And something I found extremely fascinating that Gloria was telling me about. She was like, the servers at Oktoberfest beer tents are all totally veterans. So she knows of some people who make their entire annual wage just serving at Oktoberfest.
Wow.
And she said it's everyone. So it's like, it could be a young person. She's seen people in their 60s. Like, this is a livelihood for people there. And I thought that was so cool. But 4:30 is the deadline, because you want to be stationed in a tent where you want to party, because they close the doors and they basically lock you in. Like, tent hopping.
Like a walkout law.
Yeah.
That's a thing they do in Australia in the bars, too. Yeah.
There's no tent hopping. It's not about that. It's like, you get there, you sit down, you celebrate.
You sit down and get drunk, damn it.
Right.
Yeah.
No messing around.
Well, maybe even not sitting down. So each tent, I'm told, has a different vibe. So, you know, there are some that play, well, everyone has a band. But there are some of the bands that play, like, traditional German folk music. There are other ones that play, like, more uppity folk music. There are some that, like, cover pop hits to, like, just get the party going.
Sure, why not?
And everybody just drinks beer and holds each other and sings and dances. And as far as Gloria told me, the Germans are, like, known for loving to get on tables to do all of this.
Like Coyote Ugly style.
Yeah, like Coyote style. In their, like, lederhosen with their liters of beer. And so all the benches are, like, super sturdy. That's, like, their thing. And they have this cheersing song.
Oh, okay.
I shit you not. I learned about this. Gloria told me about it. But I also learned about it in beer school.
Oh, awesome.
I'm going to play it for you.
Oh, please do.
I love that you say beer school.
It is beer school.
It is beer school.
I graduated beer school. Okay, and it goes on, but that's, like, the main chorus, right?
Yeah.
Very cool.
And so,
what does it mean?
So it means...
Does it matter?
It does matter.
It does.
It means a toast to cheers and good times. A toast to cheer and good times. And
sure, yeah.
This is the drinking song. The bands play it about every 10 minutes, and the only goal is for everyone to sing as loud as they can and cheers and drink. But the Germans are very particular about their cheersing.
Oh, I've heard this. There's an intensity to it.
There is an intensity to it. So there's no just, like, clinking the glass. That's not what it's about. When you cheer someone and you're German or in Germany, you look them in the eye and you literally cheers that one person, holding eye contact the whole time.
Oh my God, let's do it right now. This is so intense.
And then you don't cross paths with anyone else. So you like singularly cheers a person, look deep in their eyes.
Keep eye contact until the glass touches your lips? Or am I making that up?
I don't know the specifics. Is that
you
true?
You broke eye contact twice. I think that means you're going to have bad sex for like 7 years.
I know.
That's with the German girl in the vineyard that I worked at.
That's what Gloria said. Yeah. Oh,
okay. I'm going to give you one more chance. Redemption.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have good sex. That's gonna
be good sex that. For the next. Oh, thank you.
Girl, you nailed it.
So, yeah, that's what you do at Oktoberfest. So I feel like we're probably going to do that like for 1 or 2 days. I cannot imagine doing that for 12 days.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And so is there food here? Like, you can't just do this on an empty belly all day. Aside from the dinners, are there, like, snacks?
Oh, yeah.
Bratwurst kiosks?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I mean, there are vendors. It seems a lot like the State Fair of Texas. So,
okay,
like,
cool.
That's what Gloria said. She was like, you can't be that girl who doesn't drink because all of the beer is served by the leader.
Oh.
So, like, you gotta lay a foundation.
That is funny. And so why is this celebration so important to Germans still 200 years after this initial wedding? And how has it reached, like, worldwide saturation? Because we're even celebrating in Addison, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, is that weird to Germans? What do they think about the rest of the world doing it?
Yeah. So something I find really fascinating about Oktoberfest is that it's totally a Bavarian thing.
Oh,
it's not
okay.
like an all of Germany thing. There are other places besides Munich that celebrate. And, in fact, my uncle, who does not live in Bavaria, they live – or maybe they do. I didn't look – well, no, on the Rhine River, there's another. Anyway, I don't think they live in Bavaria. And he was talking about their Oktoberfest. So they have a celebration, but it's definitely like Bavaria, which is one of 15 or 16 states within Germany.
Mm.
And so the way Gloria had explained it to me, she was saying that it's kind of sort of like Texas. Like there's a real sense of pride in
Bavaria
their heritage.
Is?
Yeah.
Oh, Bavaria is like Texas? Awesome.
Yeah, Bavaria's like Texas. And she actually said, and I quote, the people are a little nicer, a little prettier, and they like things a very special way.
Aw, yeah, way to go, pride,
that.
Bavarian pride. I hear you, loud and proud Texan over here.
So surprisingly to me, Oktoberfest isn't just a tourist thing. It's very much a thing that Bavarians do, though
awesome.
They usually go during the week. So if you show up
like
on
take off of work?
Yes, take off of work or go and work in Munich so that they can, like, on their lunch break and stuff, go to Oktoberfest. That's what Gloria and her husband Lovis are doing.
Oh, wow.
And so on the weekend, you'll see a lot of tourists, Americans, yes, also European. But,
oh, cool. Yeah, like taking the train in.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you can do that in Europe.
Oh, it's so lovely. I can't wait. But the funny thing is, like, everybody wears the traditional lederhosen or dirndl.
Why? How does everyone have one? Do they rent them?
So if you're a native German, like, you have to have one, and you get one at during certain phases of your life and stuff. Like, when you get married, you're supposed to get
like
one.
Sounds like some urban legend.
I don't think so.
I don't know. That's crazy. Someone send listener mail about that, because I want to know the details on lederhosen.
Well, the lederhosen, they're made of leather. And so at these festivals, you're supposed to
leather.
Eat. They're made of leather. And you eat a lot of greasy German food, and you're supposed to wipe your hands on your pants to grease the leather.
What a That's great concept.
Really a good idea, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not even mad about it.
And the women, so there's a whole culture around this. The women, there's an apron involved in the dirndl.
Yeah.
And depending on which side that you tie it on means that you're single or you're taken.
Ooh, apron string language.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So there's a serious, like, history and culture around the dirndl as well.
Oh, wow. I wish I should know that.
The clothing.
You know, full disclosure.
There's a lot of secret code.
Right. I used to be in the German dancing troupe in high school, but we just wore a little, like, cloth lederhosen and skirts and stuff. And I think I danced the boys' part because there wasn't even enough ratio
That's
properly.
That's so funny. Well, honestly, my friend, our sister said that if you're not wearing the costume, then you kind of miss out on something. So I don't know what I'm supposed to wear, but she was like, yeah, you can, like, order something off Amazon. It doesn't have to be traditional. It can be a costume, and you're still, like, in the vibe.
I have some, like, Irish festival dresses you can look at.
Oh, that would be dope.
They might fit the aesthetic, except for, like, the Celtic knots on them, but I'll let you be the judge of that.
You gotta let me know if you're okay with those ever coming back.
Yeah.
So we'll take that combo offline.
Excellent.
But for as... As for like how Oktoberfest has spread to become a phenomenon, I mean, I think the easy answer is that German traditions follow German immigrants, right?
Right.
The Texas, and the Midwest are known for their Oktoberfest celebrations, which is sort of like where those cultures settled.
Yeah.
And plus, it's just a hell of a lot of fun, and America loves a good holiday, so.
Yeah, we do.
One note, you mentioned Addison Oktoberfest, which is often lauded as a super traditional festival. Mm. I found out that about the roots of it. I don't know exactly how old it is, but Lufthansa, which is a German airline, partnered with a German hotel that used to exist in Addison, and they hosted the very first Oktoberfest celebration there.
Oh, wow. That's so interesting. And then it just grew from there?
It just grew from there and all the polka stuff. And it has, they also only allow the official breweries of Munich Oktoberfest to serve there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the publicist told me that it's actually, the celebration has been recognized by the mayor of Munich himself as the most authentic Oktoberfest celebration outside of Munich.
Well, would you look at that?
So,
in Addison.
I know. What?
Funny story. I went to a German restaurant in Singapore.
How was that?
On Good Friday or something. It was weird. There's so many layers to it. But it was it was really good. And the decorations and even the people working there were like in the whole getup. And there was a plaque on the wall that said like the mayor of whatever town they were modeling this after like came there and was like, I applaud you. This is spot on. Interesting. Like Germany gives out plaques of like authenticity.
Like you're doing it right.
This
that's
is German approved.
Yeah.
Well, cool. And so I think you mentioned this is not your first time in Germany, correct?
Correct.
You were there before in college?
Yes, I went during my semester abroad, which was the fall of 2008. I lived in Spain.
Right, right.
Yes.
And so when you were there last time, what was memorable for you? Did you drink anything, meet family? What stood out to you for that trip?
Oh, my gosh. It's been so long, so I feel like everything stood out, but everything's a little fuzzy. I've mentioned this
getting
on
the way.
Yeah.
Getting older.
I have talked about this on the show before, but the very first beer that turned me on to like, oh, this is what beer can taste like, I had in Germany, and it was a Paulaner Hefeweizen.
It was your tipping point.
It was. It was a Paulaner Hefeweizen, and I took a sip of that beer, and I said, this tastes like candy beer. And that was.
I remember when you told that story.
Yeah, that was the beginning of my like palate evolution.
Palate evolution. Okay, we're also making a t-shirt that says that.
Other things that I remember really clearly were we did visit my family and then we hopped the train to Munich. We went to the Hofbräuhaus, which is a giant brewery and iconic beer hall and food hall. But it was also where Hitler used to host rallies, and so I read online or in a book. Actually, it was probably a book at that point in 2008. I read in a book.
Yeah, in the olden days.
Yeah. that there used to be a swastika on the ceiling, and so like my friend and I went, and we were like looking for it, and obviously they've painted over it, but there is a part
like
where
recently or like the day the war ended,
probably the day the war ended.
Okay,
like,
I hope so.
It was a book. I couldn't like Google. Right.
Well, yeah,
I couldn't source
the link
to the date.
Laura.
Yeah.
but we found it, and we also ate something I've only ever seen that one trip. Called an albino sausage.
What does that mean?
It is a white sausage.
I feel like I've seen that. What is it? Like chicken sausage?
I don't know. It was just bright white and I ate it and I was like, cool.
Was it yummy?
Yeah, it was good, I think.
Well, cool.
But I also met my family and they are so awesome.
I'm so excited for that. I love that genealogy route digging.
I know. And honestly, I'm the only one that I know has ever pursued it. Like none of my cousins on that side, definitely not my siblings.
I don't understand why not everyone's more into it either. It's blows my mind.
I don't know, but we arrived and they baked all sorts of cake and we went and visited this castle in Heidelberg, which is just a town a little bit north of where they live. Mm. I mentioned they live in Karlsruhe and it's right on the Rhine River, so right next to the border of France.
Right.
And I don't remember much about that town itself, except that my mom's cousin's son, which I think, is that my second cousin?
Ooh, I don't know how those
words
work. Once removed?
Okay.
Ooh, I think it's once removed, maybe. I think it's once removed.
Second cousin, once removed. He took us out to a bar and then to a club, and this club literally had a chocolate fondue fountain.
Like, to get in, or like...
No, to like, like put things on skewers and put in the chocolate.
Your beer in?
No, you like, it was like, hey, have chocolate fondue, and
okay, right. Yeah, I'm into it.
Yeah.
Well, since you've already been before, what's motivated you to go back? Is it for work? Is it for this podcast to go make content?
Yeah. Well, I actually really wanted to take my Oma over to Germany. So the family that I'm visiting is my grandmother's sister, and then her kids all live over there. So my mom's cousins. And after I visited them in 2008, like, I can't remember if my grandmother ever went and saw her sister. You know, my grandmother was an immigrant, and she, like, was not rolling in dough, we'll say that. And so I really, really, really wanted to take her to visit that family. But she passed away in December of 2018, and I tried to take her in 2018 in September, and she wanted to wait till her 80th birthday in 2019.
Yes.
And she didn't make it. So after that, I really debated whether or not I was going to go on this trip. Just didn't know. And
how that would sit in.
Yeah. Or if I wanted to like tackle and face that right now. But then I hosted this event for work where we screened a documentary called Beers of Joy.
Okay.
And it basically follows four people who are working to attain their Master Cicerone designation.
Neat.
And one of the girls goes to Germany and like visits the old breweries and goes through the hop farms. And I was talking to Wim Benz, who's the owner of Lakewood Brewing Company, in the lobby. And I was like, you know, this movie really is inspiring to me, but I just don't know. And he was like, do it. And I was
just
like,
do it.
You're right. I'm going to do it. And so
good for you.
Yeah, I just decided to do it. And, you know, all the other things, the podcasting, the excessive drinking, the traveling to a new place, that's all just going to be icing on the cake, I think.
You're so brave.
Thank
so
you.
So brave.
Well,
I would. Sorry to interrupt. What were you, oh, you were just cheersing your whiskey and keeping eye contact.
We should cut that part out.
Yeah. Well, you don't want our listeners to know we're drinking whiskey on the side. Well, I would love to take a moment to honor your mother and your grandmother, just all of their German roots. And they were very proud of their heritage. And before they passed, would make iconic German family recipes for you and us. And now you're kind of the matriarch of that side of the family line. So.
Yeah.
That's huge, and I'm so proud of you, first of all.
Yeah,
and how important is that to you to keep these traditions going in your family, and what are you doing to preserve those traditions?
Oh, my gosh. It is so important for me to make sure that I, like, maintain and, you know, pay attention and grow this part of my life because, yeah, I mean, with my mother who passed in 2016 and my grandmother who passed in 2018, like that's sort of dissolving. And we did have traditions, the German food, the homemade noodles, which is called Spätzle.
Yes, I remember those.
Yeah, it's literally a mix of flour and egg and water. So definitely not something you can have. Very World War II minimalist type of food topped with a simple ground beef gravy. But, you know, as a kid, this was
peasant
like
food. A good peasant dish. Yeah.
Very simple, very
a little more
manageable.
Modern,
yeah. As a kid, that was a big thing that we did with my mom and my Oma, and it was always a ton of fun and always a competition, though, because the dough has to be, like, so thick. You're literally making noodle dough. And it was a workout, and my mom and my Oma, they were always the strongest women, like, in the world. And
yeah, they were wiry, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would break a sweat trying to make noodles, and then you put the dough, or, like, not even just making the noodles, just whipping the dough, and then you put the dough inside a metal noodle squeezer.
Yeah.
That you then have to squeeze into boiling water, and I was just always such a little weakling.
Oh, kind of like a giant garlic press type of thing?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, wow, yeah.
But you have to hold it sideways and not spill the boiling water. It's a lot for a kid.
Oh, my God, yeah.
So I actually just made that recipe for the first time since both of them died.
Oh, how did it go?
It was good. It was really important to me to do that before I forgot. Like, the recipe's not written down anywhere.
Right.
So I basically just started with like a 1-to-1 cup of flour versus one egg, and you just feel it until then. Mm. But again, with me being the weakling, like the dough wasn't perfect. It was my strength dough, but it was still super tasty.
Awesome. Well, we'll keep hitting the gym and we'll make some of those spätzle to write home about.
Yeah. Can we make some gluten-free spätzle? Can
totally,
we
get
some
surely.
Gluten-free flour and yeah. try that shit?
Yeah. I'll muscle some spätzle with you.
Yeah. And obviously, like, keeping in touch with my family is super important. Family in general is pretty important to me. Very important to me. Yeah. And I haven't had the most perfect family life, but I mean, no one knows you like your family, you know?
Of course.
And in fact, after my Oma died, I didn't have a way to get in contact with my German family. Even though I saw them in 2008, I was convinced I was using my like college email account to communicate with them, and I couldn't find their emails. But it was so crazy. My Uncle Wolfgang... a couple, like a month or two ago, friended me on LinkedIn.
Just out of nowhere?
Out of the blue.
It's meant to be.
I know, out of the blue. And I was, like, so shocked. It was, like, on my to-do list to try and figure out how to get in touch with them so I could go visit them. I was going anyway. And yeah, then I found his email address, and we've been in correspondence literally every day. Gosh,
that is a really special. That is so special. Okay, so when you go to visit your Uncle Wolfgang and... on visit Oktoberfest. So walk me through your trip. What cities are you going to hit? Like, which countries?
Sure. Yeah, okay, so I'm flying into Frankfurt.
Gotcha.
Which is, like, pretty central south Germany, westish.
Gotcha.
Very specific.
Yeah, super.
And then from there, Uncle Wolfgang is picking me up from the airport, and I'm going to go to Karlsruhe for a couple days. Like Excellent. I mentioned, that's on the Rhine River, south.
You're, like, going to be, like, the buzz of the family town. They're going to be so excited to
I
have
know,
you.
I know. I'm excited. And, like, I found an Airbnb, like, in this middle of nowhere town.
Wow.
It's very exciting. So from there, we will hop the train to Munich and go to Oktoberfest for a couple days. And then I'm really hoping to visit a hop farm in the Hallertau region.
Hallertau.
Yeah, they are known for their hops. It's so luscious. Wow. And the hops there have this really awesome, spicy, herbaceous, floral, even like a little resiny flavor.
Ooh, that sounds like the kind of hops I love.
Yeah, like super green. And then from Munich, we're doing something really cool. We're going to hop on a bus and go on a 10-hour sightseeing tour to Prague. Mm. And we'll stop in, what is this, a UNESCO World Heritage City in Germany called Regensburg. And then we'll also, on our way, hit Pilsen in the Czech Republic, which is the birthplace of the Pilsner.
Oh, wow, cool.
And then we'll get to Prague and probably be stationed there as home base for like a week.
Oh, that's so cool. I love visiting UNESCO World Heritage Sites. I feel like, I'm like, thanks for curating this list of amazing things,
yeah.
UNESCO.
I don't know if I've ever been to one.
Oh, I've been to a couple, and they're always like incredible. Like the first one I went to was like a 6,000-year-old like Celtic tomb that like lined up with like the sun on solstice and stuff. Like some crazy underground
thing. I've been to Stonehenge. Yeah, I feel like that's probably on there. Yeah.
So when you get to Prague in the Czech Republic, you're actually going to see a friend that you met through podcasting. So like, hey, shout out Global Networking.
Shout out Teresa. She sent me beer earrings for Christmas. I'm wearing them right now.
Oh,
can you
hey.
See them?
I can confirm you have beer earrings on.
They're so cute. Yeah, that was amazing. She and I met at a podcasting conference in Chicago last year and decided to like walk an hour and a half from point A to point B and immediately bonded over beer.
Oh, that's so great. And so the Czech Republic is pretty cool because I've heard it's just as prolific as like as far as like history and having great beer, but it's way more under the radar and affordable than other parts of Europe and Germany.
Yes.
So
oh
what are your
gosh.
Thoughts? What are you going
to
do there?
So just to touch on the affordability, so our Airbnb for Munich Oktoberfest, first of all, the Airbnb is normally $88 a night and we're paying $245 a night.
Mm.
And then everything in Prague, it's like the first thing. It's like $50 a night to sleep 8 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's yeah. just a high level view. But the Czech Republic is incredibly iconic in beer history. It's, as I just mentioned, the birth of the Pilsner, which was first brewed on October which was first brewed on October 5th, 1842, and first served on November 11th, 1842.
So specific. Who kept records on this Pilsner?
The Pilsners.
Okay. Like, some home brewer was like, this is going to be the next hot shit.
Let me tell you, his name was Joseph Grohl. And in 1839, Pilsen built its first brewery, and they recruited a Bavarian to come over and help them out. So Joseph Grohl, what he knew about lagering from German culture and what he knew about British malts, he created it a light and snappy beer using the Czech Republic's best resource, which is water.
Oh, what makes their water so special?
Yeah, so the Czech Republic is known for its super, super, super soft water. And so that means that they can, like, hop the shit out of a beer and it's not going to be harsh or, like, prickly on your tongue.
Interesting.
And so with the Czech Pilsner, they basically essentially started the light beer revolution of Europe in 1842. Like, that was the Miller Lite of the time.
Wow. Yeah. Someone was like, finally, this is beer that has drinkability. Or maybe that's Bud Light.
I don't know. Yeah.
Trademark. So, it started the light beer revolution of Europe, and then the Germans were quick to be like, oh, shit, we got to find something to compete with this. Mm-hmm. So the Germans made a version of the Pilsner, but obviously the water differed, and they're very different beers, which you might not know unless you taste them side by side.
I hope you get to do that. That would be cool. You should buy a Pilsner in Germany and take it with you to the Czech Republic and do it side by side. Yeah.
I should. I've tried them in America.
Oh.
And I actually prefer German Pils because it's slightly lighter, drier, and crisper. Czech yeast doesn't attenuate all the way, so it leaves a little bit of a, like, residual sugar.
I see.
But I also really like Pilsner Urquell, and I've heard there's nothing better than a Pilsner from Pilsner Urquell in Pilsen.
Oh, my God. Get
and
it.
I get a white.
It's like getting a Pliny the Elder or whatever, like, on the spot. Yeah,
yes.
Cool. It's so fresh.
Yes. And the beer culture in the Czech Republic is also, like, so interesting. So you can't call anything but Pilsner or Kella Pilsner.
Mm.
Everything else is called a Czech pale lager.
Ah.
And then when you order beer, the word for beer is pivo, and you order it by basically brewery and color. So it's svetle is pale or light. Polo tamave is amber, and tamave is dark, and that's basically all that comes. No IPA, no fucking hazy shit, no coconut lactose infused, yada, yada, yada. And I'm also told that you can get liters of beer there for $1.
Wow.
They literally call it liquid bread. It is essential to the fabric of the culture.
Wow. Huh. It's kind of like going to McSorley's in York. I'll take a light.
Yes.
I'll take a dark.
And I will take one of each. Yeah. Yes. As many beers as I have hands.
Very cool. And is there hops growing in Czech as well?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. So Czech is known for its Saaz hop region. And it's a distinctly Czech hop. And it's one of four what are called noble hops.
Ooh, okay.
So Saaz and then Hallertau, Spalt, and Tittnanger. The only one that grows in the Czech region, though, is Saaz. And these... hops are known for their low bitterness, but they have huge, highly aromatic, perfumey qualities. So all the things that you'll find in styles that showcase them.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you have so much going on this trip.
Oh, my
it's
God.
So exciting. What are you most looking forward to?
Honestly, I don't have an answer to that question yet. Ask me that when I get back.
All right,
my favorite
perfect.
Part was. Because honestly, all of it is so freaking exciting.
It is. And you've been studying up a lot on it and researching a lot. So what's the most important thing you've learned so far in preparing for this adventure?
I need to learn German.
Okay.
I need to learn how to speak German.
It sounds a lot like English, a lot of the words. I feel like you could do it.
Yeah.
The syntax is not too complicated.
And I have tried. So since I last saw my family in 2008, I have been, like, on a crusade to try and learn German. Mm-hmm. I own Rosetta Stone German. I have been doing the Duolingo, but I am ashamed to say that I don't know a lick of German.
Well, you're still bilingual, though, so I wouldn't, like, put yourself up too much.
And every time, well, because my problem is I'm trying to communicate with Airbnb hosts, and I'm trying to coordinate a hop farm tour, and there's allegedly only one hop farm that gives tours in English, so I'm emailing all these people trying to get information. It all comes back in German, and I'm having to Google Translate it, and it's a
super
rough,
reliable.
Super, super rough translation. Like I told you today, my uncle wrote me, do you get boiled in Munich? And I was like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Probably, but I don't know.
Maybe. Yeah. Your guess is as good as mine, Wolfgang.
Yeah, so like they don't need to know English over there. And you know how much I love language and I've just been trying so hard. I really need to make that a priority going forward.
Wow. Okay, well, my priority... Speaking of priorities and your research and your experiences, I need to know from our season 2 finale, did we ever get confirmation if Germans do or do not drink out of Das Boot? Is that a thing that happens there?
Ah, I'm so happy to report. I did ask my Uncle Wolfgang.
Yes.
I sent him a picture and I was like, hey, do you guys drink out of this? Is this like the German boot thing a thing? And he said... the boot glass you see is only drunk on special occasions. The restaurants have these glasses. So if sports clubs, mainly celebrating youth sports departments, if they have a victory, then they use the glass. But he's going to, oh, I explain the facts to you when you are there.
I think he means the there. Oh my gosh, that's so cool. So it is confirmed. It is a social. So just like the original boot in the army of the Prussian army, it's only for special occasions, like victories on the battlefield.
An American appropriation. Nothing about Oktoberfest includes American appropriation, and I feel really good about that.
Okay, well, let's not jinx it. Knock on wood. Well, cool. I'm so excited for you, but please just promise me that you'll go back with me when I can go too. I'm so sad I can't go with you.
Yes, we will. I'm like I said, I'm going to cultivate these relationships, make sure they flourish. And yeah, we always have a place to stay in Germany.
I know. I'll be knee deep in crushed grapes while you're wearing lederhosen and swinging steins. So I cannot.
Women wear dirndls.
Dirndls. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I forgot. I was the ambiguous one in my troop.
Be knee deep in someone's lederhosen.
Well, I can't wait to live vicariously through your Instagram stories.
I'll raise a glass to that. Well, thank you guys for tuning in for our awesome little mid-season break. Please follow us on social media. We will be posting about Laura's wine adventure, mm-hmm. my beer adventure. Mm-hmm. Keep up with us there. Ask us questions. What do you want to know about the Oregon wine scene? What do you want to know about the European beer scene?
Absolutely. And we'll be prepping for season 3. And in the meantime, visit us on patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you want to keep hearing all this great content.
Yeah. Cheers, y'all.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Grapes and Grain Podcast. If you'd like to be featured on our future listener mail segment, please email any questions, comments, or anecdotes to grapesandgrain@gmail.com. That's grapes, the letter N, grain@gmail.com.
You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Grapes and Grain Podcast. Remember, that's grapes plural and grain singular.
Find us online at grapesandgrainpodcast.com to see blog posts that go more in depth to each episode. You can also download or stream the podcast there.
And of course, find us on Patreon.com/grapesandgrain if you'd like to pledge a monthly contribution. And a huge thank you to Jack and Dorothy Studios for having us in today. We couldn't do it without you, Ben.
Thanks so much for listening to our podcast today. Cheers.
Cheers.
What you drinking?